The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Students of the Game. My name is Alex Bauman, and as always, I'm joined by Nathan Glidewell today. Greg Oldenburg will hopefully be back with us next week. Keep saying that every week, but hopefully he will be back with us next week.
It's a running joke.
Moving on to AAA today, the first story we have is the Arizona Cardinals released wide receiver DeAndre Hopkins after three seasons. Nathan, what are your thoughts on the Cardinals cutting bait with yet another star?
You know, Alex, you saw my original reaction when we did our weekly recap of everything that's been going on in all sports. But obviously, you know, this was a long time coming. DeAndre Hopkins has been unhappy with the amount of production he's gotten on the Cardinals. Not just that, but where they have gone as a team. Obviously, not making the playoffs when you had that amount of talent as a team is just it's disgusting. The Arizona Cardinals as a franchise, it looks like they're heading towards a rebuild. I know we've talked about that for a couple of weeks now. You look back to when the NFL season was happening, and they just weren't getting the same type of production they would from, the star guys. But obviously, DeAndre Hopkins, he doesn't want to waste his time. He's, you know, at this point in his age, he is going to be ring chasing. He wants to go win a Super Bowl somewhere. And obviously, it was time for him to separate himself from the Arizona Cardinals.
Yeah, I think this was a long time coming. He's in trade rumors all offseason, whether that be with teams like the Chiefs or the Bills, sometimes the Patriots. Nothing ever came to fruition. Now he's on free agent market and he gets to choose where he goes. I really expect him to go to a team like the Bills or the Chiefs, maybe even the Ravens, to get that ring he's been wanting all these years. I mean, he had a chance at it with the Texans. They had like a 20-point lead, I think, in the second quarter or something, and the Patrick Mahomes became Patrick Mahomes, and the Chiefs ended up winning. I really hope he finds success wherever he goes because he really deserves it because he's probably one of the most talented receivers of this generation.
You have any thoughts on where he goes?
It's definitely going to be I think he should go to the Chiefs because they really need some wide receiver help. And he'd be amazing with Patrick Mahomes. That'd be really scary.
I don't know. I think he should get to the Patriots.
Well, time will tell where he ends up. Moving on to the second story today. On the Give Me the Hot Sauce podcast with Stacey King, Scottie Pippen was asked about the greatest NBA player of all time. He explained that he views basketball more as a team game, and he used his former teammate Michael Jordan as an example, saying, "I saw Jordan before I came to play with the Bulls. You guys saw him play. He was a horrible player. He was horrible to play with. He was all one-on-one. He's shooting bad shots, and all of a sudden we become a team and we start winning." So Nathan, do you agree with the sentiment that Michael Jordan wasn't a great player until Scottie Pippen came around?
You know, when I first saw this video, I thought it was AI. I really didn't think that Scottie Pippen would have said this about Michael Jordan, given the longevity that they spent together on the Bulls. Not only that, but outside of basketball, they seem to be pretty friendly. But, you know, to say this about Michael Jordan, I mean, it's honestly such a lie. You can break down his entire time. I know with star players, you know, you want to say they just go one-on-one, they do everything and take bad shots and do all of this. But Michael Jordan is the greatest player of all time. And for Scottie Pippen, someone who, you know, was basically, you know, right there with him, they were a dynamic duo. To say that about him, it's almost like he was being held at gunpoint. I really didn't expect him to ever say this about Michael Jordan. But, you know, I think in this clip, he was more talking about, I believe he brought up LeBron at one point, talking about he is the greatest statistical player to ever play the game of basketball, which, you know, it's hard to argue with when you look at what LeBron has done. But I don't think you need to just absolutely crap on what Jordan did just to, you know, bring another guy up like LeBron. So, you know, it really makes me reevaluate my respect for Scottie Pippen after what he said about Michael Jordan.
If you look at the stats before Scottie Pippen came there, I mean, Jordan was still a great player by himself, but the team around him was pretty atrocious. I mean, that was before Pippen, before Rodman. He didn't have Phil Jackson yet. That was 2 years after even Pippen got there, was when they hired Phil Jackson. So, I mean, Jordan was still Jordan. He was still scoring a lot of points. He averaged 37.1 points per game in 1987, which is the year before Scottie got there. So, I mean, he was still one of the best players, if not the best player in the league at that point. It was just the fact he couldn't get over the hump in the playoffs, kind of like LeBron with the Cavs before he went to the Heat. He just couldn't get over that hump and win that championship. But I think this really came down to the fact that in the Last Dance documentary, where it was supposed to be more about that entire team, it felt like it was more of a Michael Jordan documentary than anything. Do you agree with that, Nathan?
Yeah, I do. But at what point, I mean, that's the greatest player to ever play the game of basketball right there. I mean, it's kind of hard not to make a documentary about one of the greatest teams to ever play it when you had the greatest player to ever play the game of basketball right there. I mean, it's just a natural part of what you're doing on the documentary. You know, you think about whenever LeBron and they do a documentary about whatever championship team LeBron played on. I mean, LeBron's going to be the main guy talking. It's going to be about LeBron. So it's just, you know, part of the documentary. I really don't see why Scottie Pippen has to get butthurt about it. But I mean, I kind of understand to a point, given that Scottie Pippen played a huge role on that Bulls team. So
yeah, I'm not saying Jordan or Pippen would not want, or Pippen wouldn't, Jordan wouldn't win without Pippen. But I mean, Pippen was a huge thing for Jordan to get those championships he got, because without him, I don't think it would have been. It would have been those six, those two, three peats in a row.
Yeah.
But Pippen followed up with it the next day after it all went viral on Instagram with a post, and he said, "From humble beginnings to six championships, two gold medals, Hall of Fame, and leading the Bulls franchise with most playoff wins. Here's to the unsung heroes. Cheers." And it was a picture of himself on the Instagram post. So he's really doubling down with his shots at Jordan.
Yeah, someone didn't love him enough. I guess honestly. Not.
Moving on to the third story, the NBA has opened up an investigation into longtime referee Eric Lewis involving a Twitter account that responded to numerous posts on league officiating and defended Lewis and other NBA referees. The account Cutliffe Blair follows the NBA Three of the Referee accounts and the George Mason Women's Basketball account. Lewis's wife, Vanessa Blair Lewis, is the team's head coach. The user of the account has since responded to the allegation, saying he was the older brother of Mark Lewis, or Eric Lewis, Mark. So, Nathan, what are your thoughts on Eric Lewis over here maybe being behind all these Twitter posts?
Yeah, it's definitely interesting because we've definitely seen for a long time with these players that they've had burner accounts. But you never really think about, you know, refs having these type of accounts on Twitter. I guess that's just the world we live in nowadays with the access to Twitter and all these different social media applications. But it really makes you wonder what other officials have these type of accounts and what all have they been saying?
Yeah, I mean, I think it came in less obvious than him having the at of Cutliffe Blair when his wife's last name is Blair Lewis. I don't think that came in more obvious than following the account of the team she coaches.
Yeah, that's not really that bright.
Hopefully the NBA gets this figured out, whether it was him doing it or this older brother that says he was on it, or if it was just somebody trying to pull a prank on Eric Lewis or something. But hopefully the NBA gets it figured out.
Yep.
Moving on to the fourth story, the Milwaukee Bucks have hired Toronto Raptors assistant coach Adrian Griffin to be the team's next head coach. Nathan, what are your thoughts on the Bucks hiring this assistant?
Yeah, honestly, it feels like a downgrade, in my opinion. Mike Budenholzer and what he did for the Bucks, it was extraordinary. I really didn't think he deserved to go. And honestly, to replace him with an assistant like Adrian Griffin, he's a great coach. I doubt that he'll be a better head coach than Mike Budenholzer. And I think, you know, Milwaukee making these rash decisions, you know, after losing in the first round of the playoffs, is going to come back to bite them next year. When they don't have the same regular season they expect to have or the same postseason they expect to have if they get there.
Yeah, this is a long time coming for Adrian Griffin because he's been in a lot of these head coaching searches in the past couple of years. He's been an assistant coach for, I think, over 15 years, maybe something like that, and I think he deserves it. But the Milwaukee Bucks are going to have high hopes for him. They're going to want to make the playoffs. They're going to want to be in the Eastern Conference Finals. They're going to want to be in the NBA Finals. And he's going to be a rookie head coach. I know we've seen rookie coaches in the past couple of years had success. There was Nick Nurse with the Raptors. His boss there had success in his rookie year as a head coach. He won the championship. But, I mean, he's got a lot on his shoulders in his first year. I don't know if he's going to be able to live up to it, but I hope he can because this Bucks team really needs it.
That's a lot of pressure right there.
A lot of pressure, even in his first time as a head coach somewhere, college or NBA. All right, moving on to the fifth and final story for AAA. The Philadelphia 76ers have hired former Toronto Raptors head coach Nick Nurse to be the team's next head coach. Nathan, what are your thoughts on the Raptors, you know, losing another coach?
Yeah, I was really hoping you included this, speaking that this came out 10 minutes before we started recording. But at first, I was a little taken back, given that, you know, Nick Nurse, it really seemed like he was going to take a step back from coaching for a little bit. I thought that maybe he would even take a year off, given his situation. But for him to go and join this 76ers squad that, you know, rightly fired Doc Rivers after he somehow managed to lose another game seven, it's a great hire for the 76ers. And I think at this point, you're looking at it to create more of a rivalry between the 76ers and Raptors. I'm sure there's a bunch of Raptors fans out there that feel betrayed after Nick Nurse just kind of left them in the dust. I know it was more of a mutual parting between him and the Raptors, but still, at the end of the day, you're going to another Eastern Conference opponent and trying to help them win a championship. It's going to be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah, I think this is the best coach the Sixers have had in a long, long time. I mean, Nick Nurse in his first year, like I mentioned earlier, won the NBA championship with the Raptors and Kawhi Leonard and had the Pascal Siakam win the Most Improved Player Award. And, I mean, he's just a great developmental coach. He worked in the D-League, now G-League, for a while, developing those players. He was a key part of just those that championship there. And he won the Coach of the Year the next year, even though they didn't win the championship there. But he really had success with the Raptors. I think he had success with the Sixers. I mean, and this was the best hire they could have made.
I don't know. I kind of worry about Joel Embiid and where he's going to be. And also, if James Harden comes back, how is he going to be able to handle these two guys who definitely have high egos?
Well, I think Nick Nurse won more with a lot less in Toronto. I mean, you know, he had Kawhi and Siakam, but really outside of that, he had to rely on a guy in Fred VanVleet who is an undrafted player to, you know, lead that team at the point guard position.
Yeah, that is true.
Oh, I know he had Kyle Lowry there too, I believe, there won the championship. But still, I mean, Fred VanVleet was really the go-to guy there alongside Kawhi and Pascal Siakam.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Nathan, what do you got for week 7 of the USFL?
Yeah, it was definitely a crazy week. I say that every week, but that's just how the USFL is. Jumping right into our award winners, our Offensive Player of the Week being Michigan Panthers quarterback Josh Love, who went 16-29, 264 yards, and 3 touchdowns. That is a lot different from what he usually puts out on the field. We have another co-defensive players of the week, starting off with Birmingham Stallions linebacker Quentin Poling. He had 11 tackles, 2 sacks, 3 tackles for losses, and he is joined by Memphis Showboats defensive tackle John Atkins, who had 4 tackles, 2 sacks, 2 tackles for losses, and 5 passes defended. Our special teams player of the week was Pittsburgh Maulers kick returner Josh Simmons, who had 7 returns for 233 yards, including an 88-yard touchdown. You know, Alex, jumping off immediately, we knew this week was going to be a big week, speaking that the both standings in both divisions were so close, and we had a lot of division matchups that were going to mean a lot for the playoffs coming up here soon, just, you know, I guess 2 weeks away now. You know, jumping into probably the biggest game of the week, the Birmingham Stallions took on the New Orleans Breakers. Birmingham got the win 24-20 and taking that number one spot in the division and also moving the Breakers out of the playoff situation. You know, this Stallions team has gotten better and better every single week, led by quarterback Alex Magoo, who really seems like the prime MVP candidate for the league at this moment. They went 3 out of 4 in the red zone. You talk about what Alex Magoo has been able to do. He was 16-23, 176 yards, a touchdown through the air, as well as 7 carries for 22 yards and a touchdown on the ground. And you know, Alex, like we've challenged this team every single week, to give Alex McGee some help. CJ Mariable comes out and has another great week with 17 carries, 86 yards on the ground, a touchdown, as well as 6 receptions for 52 yards, through the air. And he was the team's leading receiver. That's the type of production you expect to see from CJ Mariable. I know he's been a little bit more quiet this season, but he's definitely getting back to the same point we expect him to be at. Looking at this Breakers team, it's all been about turnovers. Every single game that they've lost, you know, they've now lost 3 straight outs, and the consistent problem has been them turning the ball over. You talk about what Bethel Thompson has done. He has been extraordinary outside of the turnovers. He was 24-42, 279 yards in the touchdown, but that turnover kills him. I know that was on the last play of the game, but still. West Hills had a pretty good game as well, having 20 carries for 77 yards on the ground, as well as 3 receptions for 11 yards to the air. But he did have the big fumble loss which kind of, you know, set Birmingham up to, you know, not, they didn't really have a great first half. They didn't move the ball at all, but they're kind of just gifted field position by turnovers. You know, the other one coming off a, you know, muffled punt, it hit one of the Breakers players in the back of the leg. And, you know, there's not much you can do about that, but this Breakers team has to cut down on the turnovers. You know, for a while, Birmingham dominated this game. It was 24-9 for a while. The Breakers defense ended up getting some stops. And, you know, the Breakers offense responded, you know, getting those two quick touchdowns. And, you know, they were right there. They had a attempt to go down and try to win it at the end of the game. I know that there wasn't a lot of time left, but they came up short. But it really goes back to them turning the ball over so much. They don't turn the ball over in key situations and convert in the red zone. Speaking that they went out of four in the red zone, then they win this ball game. It's really just a heads up to the Science defense, who, you know, after returning JoJo Tillery, which he has been absolutely insane for the Stallions, having four tackles, three solo tackles, and an interception, the game-sealing interception in this game, he has been actually huge, being that leader that they expect him to be, and as well as getting guys like Quentin Poling. That production from them has been huge. Alex, what did you see from the Stallions team on both sides of the ball to prove that they can get another championship?
Yeah, so they're trying to figure things out. I mean, in the early parts of the season, they were kind of discombobulated because all the injuries they were suffering with Scooby Wright and Bo Scarborough, JoJo Tillery, who's now back, like you mentioned, Nathan. But it's really they're really trying to put these puzzle pieces together. And it looks like they're coming together as of now. I mean, Alex Magoo played great, didn't have to lead the team in rushing for the first time in a long time, it felt like. CJ Marable, like you mentioned, Nathan, picked up the slack on the ground, rushing and then receiving as well. But one thing I worry about with the team is the lack of receiver help. I mean, Adrian Hardy consistently looks like he has pan hands. He lost a fumble, dropped a few passes. Jay Sternberger has had a few great catches this game. But really outside of that, the receivers have not played great these last 2 weeks. Need to get somebody to step up like Davion Davis did for a couple weeks in the middle of the season. They definitely need somebody to help Magoo in the passing game outside of CJ Marable. But looking at that defense, there was a stretch there where the defense looked like one of the worst ones in the league. And just like I mentioned with the offense, looks like they're figuring it out now. Quentin Poling, I mean, there was that hit he had on McLeod Bethel Thompson that I was scared he's going to get flagged for because it was so vicious. I mean, he like suplexed him on the ground. It was so cool. And he just continues to be the guy. Scooby Wright is not on the field anymore. JoJo Tillery, like you mentioned, Nathan, when he had that on the punt return, at the end of the game where he downed it at the 1 yard line. I thought I should have been down at the 1 yard line, but Mike Brer, you know. You know, I don't know what he was looking at on the replay, but he had downed the ball and he was not even close to the end zone yet. I thought that was going to screw the Stallions there, but it ended up not doing it because JoJo Tillery and the rest of that defense stepped up when they needed it most. Looking at the Breakers, what were you saying, Nathan?
Just that play in general was so surprising to me. You know, it was clear that I was down at the one. I was just surprised that they changed the call on it. And the fact that it took, 12 minutes to figure it out. They end up walking up and down the field like two different times because the ref had changed the calling two different times. It was just crazy to me.
Yeah, looking at the Breakers, I mean, it feels like we're back in week one with them because in the week one, they couldn't finish drives. They had to settle field goals. And once again, they couldn't finish drives and had to settle field goals. Matt Coffin was 4-for-4 on field goals along of 55 yards. And they only had one touchdown in the red zone. They had to have to get better with that. It's been a couple weeks now where they struggled to get in the red zone, to get in the end zone for that matter. They got to get better. Bus Hills was really limited in the passing game, receiving game, catching passes. We've seen the past couple weeks, he's been able to be effective in that, and he wasn't able to do that this game, and the Stallions team has really stepped up there. I think the Breakers really got to get back to the drawing board because this is now, what, three straight losses?
Yes, sir.
And it feels like there's no adjustments by John DeFilippo and this coaching staff, and it's really got to get figured out if they're going to want to make the playoffs in a very competitive South Division.
Yeah, well, they got 2 weeks to do it. And they are, you know, everyone in the South Division is really close. You know, the Stallions hold a one-game lead on everyone else. But everyone else in the league in that division is tied, you know, with the 4-3 record. So it's not like they're out of it yet. They just got to keep their heads up and go move on to the next week. Moving on to the second game of the weekend, the Philadelphia Stars took on the Pittsburgh Maulers. The Stars ended up winning 37-31. The Maulers just dominated time possession. And I mean, the Maulers dominated time possession 31 minutes to 28. The Stars just 28. But the Stars outgained the Maulers 347 yards to the Maulers 202. Both teams ended up having two turnovers. This was a really sloppy game for the most part. These defenses played extremely well. But I think the one thing, both these offenses performed way better than we both expected, Alex. Talk about what the Stars offense was able to do. They were 3 out of 4 in red zone touchdowns. Case Cookis came out. He was 18 of 30, 235 yards through the air and 2 touchdowns. He did have that 1 interception, but he also had 4 carries and 28 yards on the ground. Alex, I'm going to let you talk about running back Matt Colburn here in a little bit. So I'm going to move on and save him for you. you talk about Case Cookis and the amount of help he got from his receiving crew, Corey Coleman, who we knew he was going to be one of the bigger targets for Case Cookis this season. He has a big game, sets up with 4 receptions, 75 yards to the air and a touchdown. And, you know, he was also joined by Devin Gray, who had 4 receptions for 75 yards. This is really what we expect Case Cookis to do. We expected the Stars offense to be performing like this all season long. I know you did, Alex. You had them as, you know, your original champion before the start of the season. but, you know, it's obviously that the talent is not the issue. It's just the execution on that part. Looking at the smaller team, they went 3 out of 3 in the red zone. Troy Williams, I know he had a bad week last week, but he returns this week and he went 18 to 28, 145 yards through the air, a touchdown. I did have an interception, but he also led the team in rushing with 11 carries or 44 yards. You talk about someone who doesn't have any help. We've, you know, it's been pretty much a broken record. Me and you, I was just talking about how this Maulers team does not have a rushing attack. Troy Williams is no help outside of his receiver, Bailey Gaither. And really, he didn't really do much either. It's just really surprising to see, you know, where this Maulers team has come from. You know, they looked atrocious originally at the beginning of the season, and they've gotten to this point, yet they still have so many problems that they need to fix. Really, the only help that Troy Williams got on the offensive end was his kick returner, Josh Simmons, who had 7 returns, 233 yards, and that, you know, 88-yard return for a touchdown. But outside of that, it really seems like Troy Williams has been on an island at this point, and you're really just asking some of his offense to step up and help. You know, definitely the problem has not been the Maulers defense. They've been able to do what they're supposed to do. But if the Maulers offense cannot perform and they are not on the field for a good majority of the game, then this Maulers defense is going to continue to be tired, and they're not going to have the same production that you expect them to have all game long.
Yeah, starting with the Stars, Nathan. Like you mentioned, Matt Colburn, I'm giving him a big cookie this week, bigger than last week, because he had 82 yards on the ground rushing on 20 carries and had 2 touchdowns. He finally woke up even more than he already has these past 2 weeks, because I'm just so proud of him, man. I really am. He's really turned it on as of late. I mean, he's helped Case Cookis out a lot. Case Cookis, he struggled last week pretty heavily. He had 2 interceptions, I believe, and no touchdowns. But this week, he had 2 touchdowns and an interception. With 235 passing yards, and he got help from his receivers, Corey Coleman, Devin Gray, like you mentioned, Nathan. But also like to mention the fact that LeBron Ray deemed to tackle for that defense, finished with 2 sacks and 3 TFLs. He was lights out for that defense, really stepped up when they needed him. But also the Stars kick returner didn't have a bad week either. Terry Wright had 3 returns for 142 yards with an average of 47.3 yards. He was really setting the Stars offense up in great positions to score on the offensive side of the football. And I think the Stars team is definitely turning it on as of late when they need it most, because at the start of the season, it looked very, very dark for this team.
Yeah, you talk about their you know, place in their division. They now have the first overall spot in that division with a 1-game lead over the Panthers and then a 2-game lead over the Generals and Maulers. It's definitely been a long time coming for this team.
But then moving on to the Maulers, I know they went 3 for 3 in the red zone on touchdowns. But Troy Williams, like you mentioned, Nathan, has absolutely no help. He was a leading rusher. His second, the running back he had, Madre London, had 3 carries for 26 yards. That was the only guy aside of him that really was effective in the run game. And then you had his leading receiver was a fullback with 34 receiving yards. I mean, this offense inside of Troy Williams is absolutely lost. I really feel bad for the guy, because I feel like he was on another roster, maybe like the Gamblers or maybe even the Showboats. He'd be having a lot more success, getting a lot more credit than what he for what he's doing. But that defense, like you mentioned, Nathan, as well, continues to play great. But they can't win you football games every week as hard as they try. Even their kick returner, Josh Simmons, did his best to propel this team to victory. It's just because the offense could not get any help for Troy Williams is the reason they lost.
Yeah, you know, Alex, I think we finally figured it out. We, you know, we talked about it a little bit last week, trying to figure out week to week what has been the main thing for teams to be able to win. We started off with the rushing game. It's more to have a rushing attack. Then we turned to defense. If the defense does not get stops, then you're not going to win. But, you know, at the end of the day, if your special teams does not pick up some of the slack on the offensive end, then you're not going to win a game. You talk about what both these kick returns were able to do. And we talked about Terry Wright, you know, with his three returns, 142 yards. You know, but these guys are averaging like 40 yards a return almost. And it is crazy to believe that, you know, they're setting these offenses up in such good field position, and these offenses are just struggling to come out and take advantage of it. In the USFL, where you have you know, the kick placement backed up a good number of yards, and you get these positive kick returns, you think that these offenses would be able to convert on possessions more times than not. But sometimes that just isn't true for some of these offenses. But I feel like it's important to highlight what these kick returners have been able to do. Not only that, but their place kickers too. You talk about what Luis Aguilar has been able to do for the Stars team. He continues to be incredible. I mean, he was 3-for-3 on field goals, as well as 4-for-4 on extra points in this game. He has been lights out for him. He has won them multiple games at this point. But, you know, it's not only him. It's a lot of different special teams players in the league, and they need their credit. Moving on to the third game of the weekend, the Houston game, we're stuck on the Memphis Showboats. The Showboats ended up getting the win, 23-20. You know, this game was really physical. I know you're going to talk about what Kendrick Bahar did in this game. I'm going to let you have your moment.
What he didn't do?
Well, what he didn't do with this game is more like it. But Mark Thompson, he kind of has a game where he comes back down to earth. Only 13 carries for 42 yards. He did have two touchdowns on the ground, as well as two receptions and 17 yards through the air. But outside of that, it seemed like he didn't have the normal week we expect him to have, given the past few weeks that he's had over 100 yards rushing on the ground. I really question this Gamblers offense. It seems like they just don't have a number one receiver to go to. Justin Hall has really been that guy for him, yet he only had two receptions for 19 yards in this game. Moving on to the Showboats, you know, they were only 1 out of 3 in red zone touchdowns. Cole Kelly, you know, looked awful in this game. He was 12 of 24, 146 yards to the air, a touchdown, but he had an interception and a fumble loss. He was really carried by his running back, Gareth White, who had 19 carries, 81 yards. And, you know, the guy from last week, running back Juwan Washington, had 9 carries for 34 yards. You know, and that kind of production is what you expect from your running backs. And, you know, another huge guy helping out the Showboats offense was wide receiver Derek Dillon. I know what he did last week on special teams, but this week he comes and does it on the offense for 2 receptions, 72 yards, and a touchdown. He had the game-winning touchdown, 64-yard game winner. It's just crazy that, you know, someone actually gets help for once. I think the biggest thing to highlight has been the Showboats defense. You talk about what John Atkins has been able to do, co-defensive player of the week, 4 tackles, 3 solo tackles, 2 sacks, 2 tackles for losses, and 5 passes defended. He is literally doing everything for that team. But that defense has been all over the place. They were giving Kenji Bahar and that Gamblers offense, you know, hell. I think I saw Kenji Bahar running for his life the majority of the game. And, you know, given that he was injured just a few weeks ago, that is not good for him. You really wonder where this Gamblers offensive line was doing in this game. Alex, I'm going to go ahead and let you talk about Kenji Bahar because I know you got a little bit to say.
Yeah, a couple weeks ago, I did apologize to Kenji Bahar because he had a couple of weeks there where he looked like the best quarterback in the league. And these past two weeks, I mean, I don't know where he's gone. It's like he's disappeared back to the quarterback he was when I started calling for his job. Maybe I should start doing that again and he'll start playing better. Because he had 0 touchdowns, 2 interceptions, and on the last play of the game had the worst pass I think I've ever seen for the end of a game. And Mark Thompson has continued to bail him out week after week when he doesn't perform well. And Mark Thompson had the great of a week. He had 42 yards, like you mentioned, Nathan, 2 touchdowns. And then wasn't really effective and was – didn't lead the Gamblers to the win here. Other defense played very well. They had 3 guys. Safety Manny Bunch played very well. Linebacker JT Tyler. But then also defensive end Isaiah Chambers, who leads the league in tackles for loss. He had 3 tackles for loss this game. I mean, he's really, really good. I would be scared to go against him if I was an opposing quarterback. It's just this game where Steam Kenji Bahar, maybe you need to get benched for Terry Wilson. Maybe that'll inspire you to do something. Moving to the Showboats, just another outstanding defensive performance from that team. Their offense continues to not play that great. Cole Kelly definitely had some key turnovers here, but the defense bailed them out with how stout they were in the red zone and just all over the field. When I saw Atkins on the back of the jersey for the Showboats, I thought that was Geno Atkins. Used to be defensive tackle for the Cincinnati Bengals. I was like, who is that? Then I looked it up and it was John Atkins. I mean, he was amazing this game. I don't know where he came from, but dude was one of the main reasons they ended up winning with those five passes defended. He was just batting them down left and right. Kenji Bahar was, like you mentioned, Nathan, absolute hell. But the really big difference for this Showboats team and the Gamblers team was the fact that the Showboats kicker made all three of his field goals and both of his extra points. Well, the Gamblers kicker missed a field goal, but made both his extra points. So that missed field goal by Nick Vogel, who's the kicker for the Gamblers, ended up being the difference in the game where the Gamblers could have tied it.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, it wasn't all on him. You know, you just look at what Kenji Bahar didn't do in this game and lead this team. But, you know, given the Gamblers, you know, what they were doing, I believe they were on a 4-game winning streak, and you expected them to really take control of this South Division, given that they were fighting for a playoff spot in this game, with Memphis only being a game back. And it really seemed like, you know, this team didn't come out with a type of energy I expected them to have, given that it was such a close battle. And you know, they're not out of it yet. Like we've said, Alex, these division races are so close. But you know, they just can't get down on themselves. They got to move on to next week, and they got to find a way to win if they want to make the playoffs. Moving on to our last game of the week, the Michigan Panthers took on the New Jersey Generals, and the Panthers ended up getting the win 25-22. The Panthers outgained the Generals 373 yards to the Generals 258. You know, this was a really clean game. Both teams didn't have a turnover. You know, and every drive in the fourth quarter ended up in a touchdown, besides the game-ending drive by the Panthers. Michigan entered the fourth quarter up, you know, 12-10. It was a really close battle, really defensive battle. But the main difference was Reggie Corbin just coming alive. You know, like we said, Alex, he's kind of had, you know, kind of a few sleeper weeks. He's kind of just sleepwalked through these games, but he finally comes out with 20 carries, 78 yards, and three receptions with 22 yards to the air. But you really talk about Josh Love and the improvement in this game that we expected him to make. He's had some terrible weeks. There's no way to, you know, beat around the bush there. He's had some terrible weeks. There's been weeks where I thought he was going to lose his starting job, but he comes out in this game and he is 16-29, 264 yards and three touchdowns. I know this Panthers team only went 1 out of 3 in the red zone, but you know, Josh Love was able to make some of these big plays, that we knew he was capable of making. One of the bigger, you know, receiver targets for Josh Love being Joe Walker with 5 carries, five receptions, 121 yards and a touchdown. You know, it's really been crazy to see Josh Love finally get some help. He hasn't had that go-to receiver all year round, but you know, Joe Walker steps up. You know, also had wide receiver Trey Quinn step up with 3 receptions and 61 yards and a touchdown. You know, this Panthers offense, it definitely had some holes in it for a while, but you know, they definitely found some stuff out in this game, and especially in that fourth quarter. Looking at the Generals team, they were 2 out of 2 in the red zone. You know, and quarterback Kyle Luana, who you know is kind of new to all of this. He's only, I believe this is his second week starting, but he went 9 of 16, 112 yards to the air and 2 touchdowns. And you know, he was also joined by quarterback DeAndre Johnson with he went 9-14, 89 yards and the touchdown, as well as 4 carries for 9 yards. But unfortunately, he did lead this game, and he had to go to the hospital after a helmet-to-helmet collision. So, you know, keep him in your prayers. I'm sure he is better now. But definitely one of the scariest things you can see playing or watching football. You talk about Darius Victor. He's had some poor weeks, especially you go back to that week. He had 3 fumbles in 1 game, but he definitely stepped up in this game, having 8 carries for 52 yards, as well as 4 receptions for 29 yards to the air and a receiving touchdown. He was also joined by wide receiver Alonzo Moore, who has 6 receptions, 63 yards, and 2 touchdowns. But outside of those two guys, it really felt like this Journal's offense had no key playmakers. They failed to convert on a 3-point play on their final touchdown, which would have tied the game. And they also failed the 4th and 12 alternate, instead of the kickoff. But they had multiple chances to tie this game or take the lead. But it really seemed like the lack of playmakers for this Generals offense kind of prohibited them from taking the lead in this game and winning.
Yeah, last week I said Josh Love was playing a lot better, and you kind of looked at me, Nathan, and kind of shrugged your shoulders and said, "I don't know about that." But this week he proved that wasn't a fluke last week. Like you mentioned, Nathan, the stat line, 264 yards on those 3 touchdowns, no turnovers. It feels like when he doesn't have Carson Strong on his heels, battling him for that quarterback position in game, he plays a lot better, plays a lot more loose, and proven these last 2 weeks. Reggie Corbin, like you mentioned, Nathan, stepped up when he needed to with Josh Love. If they can get Reggie Corbin these consistent 20 carries a game, he's able to find success. It'll be a lot better than what they've been doing. Trying to run him and Stevie Scott, like splitting carries almost 50-50. I feel like they need to pick one running back and stick with it, as it's proven to be more effective with Reggie Corbin. Joe Walker, once again, has a great week. I know he had a great week when Josh Love had the great performance in week 1 with just another 121-yard game. Trey Quinn, another great game, like you mentioned, Nathan, with 61 receiving yards and a touchdown. But I thought Cole Murphy, the Panthers kicker, was about to be flipping burgers at Burger King with Lorenzo Burns, because he was 1 for 3 on extra points. And if the Generals were somehow able to complete that 3-point attempt, they would have tied the game. And that would have been just because of the fact that the kicker for the Panthers could not make extra points. But luckily for him, the defense prevailed for the Panthers and held the Generals on that 3-point play and then on the 4th and 12 conversion attempt. Looking at the Generals, Kyle Oletta and Jahdre Johnson. Mike Riley tried to run into 2 quarterback system once again. It's like that SpongeBob meme where they're trying to tell you, I don't know how many times we're going to tell you this, old man, because he just continues to try to do this thing. And it's hard to watch. It really is. Because when he doesn't play 2 quarterbacks, they play so much better, in my opinion. So much better. I hope Jahdre Johnson comes out of that hospital better with the diagnosis, I believe, a concussion. Hopefully he's better, able to play football either next week or the week after, or gets a quick recovery. Kyle Oletta, he's been really impressive to me. And only had 112 passing yards, but he had 2 touchdowns. He did not turn the ball over. I think if he's able to come in next week and play that starting quarterback position, like Josh Love, and I have Jahdre Johnson or whoever the backup is next week on his heels, it'll benefit him very well. Alonzo Moore continues to be his go-to guy at the receiver position. It just comes down to the fact that they could not convert on that final 3-point attempt, and then convert on that 4th and 12. They had so many chances, like you mentioned, Nathan, so many chances. They just cannot convert.
Yeah, breaking down that, failed 3-point attempt, they tried to run, kind of a stop and go. And I really think that Howletta, needs to be more patient and give his receiver a little bit more time. He kind of forced it when, he was so covered. But I definitely think that, that was probably the main opportunity they had. And I, in my opinion, I probably would have called a different play. I didn't agree with the play call. I felt like it was kind of a forced situation, and it didn't really give Kyle Oletta a lot of options. But then you look at what they were trying to do on that 4th and 12 play to get the ball back instead of kicking the ball off or doing anything like that. It was kind of a similar play. I thought they forced it. I thought that, they didn't give Colorado a lot of options. I know you're trying to make it a little bit more simple, speaking that he just, took over the starting position. But I think in that situation, you're going to need to confuse the defense a little bit more. If you run some of these more complex plays and you get guys out of position, and maybe you can have one of these plays break open. And that really falls on the Journal's coaching staff, and hopefully that they can be better about it in that game.
Yeah, hopefully, because that coaching staff, Mike Riley, like I mentioned, he's really got to just figure out one quarterback and stick with it, because good Lord, it feels like every week he tries to do this 2-quarterback system, and it's like I'm pulling my hair out over here, and I could do a better coaching job at this point.
It hasn't worked once.
I don't think it has yet. Well, all right, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you for listening to Students of the Game.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.